This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. This is continuing coverage of United States versus Sean Diddy Combs from the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today.
Interesting testimony continues in the trial of Sean Diddy Combs. Capricorn Clark testifying just this week that she worked for Diddy on and off from 04 to about 2018, despite being threatened, physically assaulted, forced to work in a car at gunpoint, traumatized by workplace intimidation. She even reconnected with his legal team in 2024 to ask for a job as chief of staff. Here to discuss her testimony, to break it down, because there's a lot that has come out here. Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author. And we're not victim blaming or anything like that here. We're just trying to break down the psychology of what was going on and the control that this man seemed to have over people. I think the big question in this one, you know, people always think of the relationships that are romantic. You know, why didn't you leave? People seem to maybe understand that a little bit better if they've been in a bad relationship and dynamics. We've all had bad jobs, but I don't think quite to this point. What do you think is going on here? Working for him for about 14 years on and off, really horrible abuse, but still keep coming back to Diddy.
Yeah, this could be a book of this woman's life experience. Really, it would be fascinating because I think this is an incredible example of what we call a trauma bond, which is when people, and you mentioned abusive relationships, it's fairly common in a romantic relationship, but people can have that with their parents as well if they're raised in an abusive home. As someone who attaches very deeply and often with affection to someone who is cruel and hurtful to them. And this is hard to understand, but we can all form attachments in this way if we're in the right circumstances and we have the right vulnerabilities. And it's because the perpetrator mixes kindness, rewards, sometimes apologies, sometimes often affection in various ways, mixes it in with the cruelty. And the victim comes to think that when they're being punished in some way or treated badly, that it's their fault. And if they do things different, if they get it right, that it's going to improve. And so in that way, it's almost like an addiction. They keep trying to get it right with the fantasy that someday this is all going to be better. And they get enough out of it as far as money or, you know, self-esteem from the times that the person is kind to them, that it just keeps them coming back. Now, people who have been raised in abusive families are particularly vulnerable to this. And when I look at the length of time that this lady stayed in this situation with him, it makes me think that she must have had a pretty rough childhood.
Yeah. I mean, one would certainly wonder about that. I'm wondering if, like, on a very kind of simplistic level, to help others understand this, is if you've been in, you know, several relationships in your life, wherever that may be, some were good, some were bad, some were just kind of there, but, you know, they were good human beings. What are the ones that, you know, people on average tend to look back on like social media or check up on out of curiosity? It tends to be the bad ones, I would think, in a lot of cases, where one would think if the brain is, you know, working in a more healthy way, you'd be more curious about the folks where it was good and things didn't work out, or even just, you know, it was there, but, you know, how you doing? But to gravitate back towards the trauma out of curiosity, that's interesting. I think it's something all of us do to a certain extent. Now, there's that line of just curiosity, and sometimes it's, I hope they're doing good, or I hope maybe I'm going to see they passed away a few years ago. And there's just, you know, oh, and then you go, oh, maybe nobody noticed and they passed away a few years ago. Or there's, you know, just kind of indifference. Oh, that's where they live now. Okay, whatever. Is that a good analogy? Just the curiosity, the way the brain works, where we tend to go back to more negative things out of curiosity than we do things that would be healthier for us?
I think the thing that may be going on there is the tendency to want to connect the dots.
Mm-hmm.
Why was I with that person?
Mm-hmm.
What went wrong? What is it about them that hooked me in? And so I think there's this natural curiosity when we're trying to make sense of our own narrative. Certainly, I've done that. I wrote a book on that.
Yes,
trying
you
to
did.
Make sense, trying to make sense of my bad judgment.
Right here.
Yeah.
Nightbird, available wherever you get books.
And a lesson in what really are cluster B disorders and why do people get hooked into these relationships.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost, in a way, I think it is healthy if we're trying to understand ourselves and avoid making those same mistakes in the future.
Very true. Do you think that could be what was going on here with Capricorn Clark in a way of, I mean, just the idea that, you know, back in, what was it, 2014 or whatever, where when she started working for him, I mean, it was a big deal. People wanted to work. There was a television show called Who Wants to Work for Diddy?
Oh, I did not know that.
It was literally a show.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. So, that's sick.
There was multiple seasons of this thing. And it existed. So it was kind of a thing. It was, people were considering it kind of a big, and at the time, if you didn't know about all this stuff, and most of us didn't, if you got a job with working directly for him as like his like direct head of staff and things of that nature, if you're going into that, you're going to think, oh my gosh, this is going to change my life. This is going to be so good. I'm sure you're excited about it. I'm sure there's just a lot of positivity. And then you get to know Diddy. And then things get really, really dark. But still that hope and that dream of, well, it could be like this. You know, it sure looked like it would be like this, but it's not like this. That makes a lot of sense if you kind of keep going back on, well, maybe if I handle them differently this way or I handle them differently that way. This is a professional relationship. It could be true of a personal one too, but that does make sense. Trying to connect those dots. And is it kind of a fixer type thing as well? Where like, if I fix me or fix them, I can get this to go the way it should.
Yeah, it's very seductive. And if a person was raised in a family where that was their role in the family to try to get it right, to try to keep mom or dad calm, and that's a template that they carry into their adult life. And you can see how Capricorn was probably very vulnerable to this. And the rewards were probably huge. I'm assuming she was well paid financially.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a hook too. And thinking that if I just win him over, it's going to get better for me.
There was a lot of extreme ups and downs with him. It was either hellish and you're working for the devil, or you are living the highest life of some of the very, very few people on this planet.
Yeah.
And I don't think there was a lot of in between. It was this or it was that. And sometimes that high life ends up being more seductive where you think, well, I can put up with this enough. I can, and then it amps and amps and amps. And eventually it's very discombobulated. She described it as total domination of Combs as controlling every aspect of her life. And this is an employee dictating where she lived, forcing drug errands, ordering polygraph tests, even managing her own relationships. What kind of a human being is doing that sort of thing? Or what's more so wrong with a human being who is trying to exert that level of control over anyone, more or less one of your own employees?
It's bizarre. And the thing that's so shocking, as I always say, is that this man has been idolized in our culture.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the most psychopathic people I've heard of. I guess we could say the serial killers, you know, might top it. But this is incredibly psychopathic and bizarre. I don't know how to explain it. What could, other than, as we say, a combination of bad genetics and role modeling and, you know, too much wealth. But there's this sadistic quality with him, and it's beyond belief. This lady would have a heck of a book about psychopathological relationships.
Oh, I can only imagine. Let's talk about another thing that went on. She witnessed there, and it corroborates more stories. I mean, this is why Diddy is going to be going down, at least on the Cassie charges. Clark described watching Combs kick Cassie Ventura repeatedly while she was in a fetal position and said she begged security to step in, but no one helped. How can you explain that? I mean, can you explain moral injury and the trauma that comes from watching violence helplessly, especially when it involves people you care about? Why does someone not step in? Is it fear? Is it it's going to happen to me next? Is it, I don't know, just it happens so regularly, it loses the, you know, the horrid quality of it?
Yeah, the happening regularly, I think, desensitizes people to it. It's sort of like, well, here we go again. But moral injury is a real thing. And you see that often in wartime when people witness atrocities, but feel frozen. And I think that sense of being frozen is part of the trauma response, right? We go fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. And I think she was certainly frozen a good deal of the time, as were probably other people around him. It's sort of like a combination of he was a mafia boss and a cult leader. I mean, it's one of the stranger stories that I've ever heard, not because he was a sadistic and a psychopath, but because he had the power over all these other people and hung out with celebrities, you know, other celebrities. And nobody called this out for decades. It's truly strange.
It is the level that he was able to get away with it on. Another piece that came out in the last week was the firebombing of Kid Cudi's car. This was someone who was dating Cassie Ventura on a little breakup time between the two of them. And, well, Diddy didn't like it. So he threatened that he was going to blow up Kid Cudi's car. And a few weeks later, it was firebombed with a Molotov cocktail. He just testified in court the other day. Clark testified and said Combs forced her into an SUV with a gun in his lap, took her to Kid Cudi's house, and refused to let her go unless Cassie agreed to show up. So this was pressuring her to convince Cassie to come and show up to this meeting that was going to go on. I mean, this is someone who, you know, okay, let's go on this car ride, and he has a gun. I'm guessing he probably had a gun on him a lot. The question I think would be, and I'm sure what the defense is going to try and present, that, well, she was just following directions in a high pressure situation, that they needed to go to this house. And of course, he always carries a gun with her, but this is like an actual threat under coercive control, a big difference than just, you know, he's kind of an extreme dude and I'm just following orders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely off the chart and hard to put myself in that kind of situation and imagine what it was like for Capricorn. Mm-hmm. But I think she lived under the terror that she was going to be killed at any given time. And that changes the way a person reacts in situations like that.
There's just so much of where this goes. I'm always just, every day with the Diddy case, I'm like, oh my God, he did that too. I mean, it's so dark. There was another fact that had come out as well. Diddy, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. He went as far as convincing Cassie's mom, because she knew that Cassie was in an abusive relationship with Diddy, basically made Diddy's mom pay him $20,000 or something was going to happen to Cassie.
Wow.
Here's $20,000. Don't tell anybody. It was like, you pay me not to hurt her worse. I mean, this is psychopathic, is it not? I mean,
100% psychopathic and a little bit crazy. I mean, you know, it's hard to understand, why do you need this kind of power over people? I always use the word sadistic with him too. Yeah. He is above and beyond your average garden variety psychopath who makes up, you know, a lot of the prison system. I mean, he needs a special place in hell, quite frankly. This guy is awful.
I have another question, but I wonder if we're going to start finding bodies soon.
I wonder the same thing.
And maybe not even in this conviction, but I do. I mean, because they're still investigating this guy. I'm wondering if we're going to start finding bodies and we're going to start finding people that did die and go. I'm wondering about the Tupac situation, because that whole trial is off the table right now until next year because of new evidence that has come in. We don't know if it's anything to do with Diddy. I don't think it would be far of a stretch, but just, you know, people who aren't even necessarily well known, people, things I wonder about are people like bodyguards, people like security, people who are not like the direct assistants of Diddy, people who are just there to, I guess, you know, kind of keep people in line, be the bouncers and stuff. These people saw a lot of horrible stuff and they didn't report it. They didn't do anything about it. I'm wondering, I mean, it's easy to go, well, why wouldn't they? They could overpower him. They could get out of there. Yeah. But what else is he going to do to them and their family?
Exactly.
Do you think there was a lot of that going on within those ranks? And I'm wondering about the ones who did say, screw you, I'm going to do this anyhow, and got silenced before anything got out or just got laughed out of the room. There actually is. And he was brought up in testimony just recently. I should do a deeper dive on this. This is the man who was the Trump hotel shooter. You remember that guy? A couple years ago, he looked psychopathic, went into the Trump hotel, started shooting things up. And then he started saying crazy things. At least at the time, it sounded crazy. Started saying crazy things that he was a sex slave for Diddy. We're like, he just shot up the hotel. Like,
wow.
What? You're a sex slave for Diddy? What?
Yeah.
Well, according to Cassie, he was. He actually was. He was a Chippendales dancer at the time who was recruited and actually was there. And he had sex with Cassie in front of Diddy for money.
Who would have guessed?
Those are the type of folks that I'm wondering about. He was still alive. I mean, he had a mental break and snapped and did that. But, and then he's saying these insanely crazy things. At least we think they're crazy. It's the folks like that that maybe aren't shooting up the hotels, but they're in their own torture chamber of life because they've lost their mind or had some sort of a break from reality, that are out there as well. Because he got out, he got away, but this is where he ended up mentally. That one would have to guess there's a lot more people out there, don't you think?
That's it. And there may be more stories that come out, more people willing to step forward and discuss, you know, the dirty things that have happened after he's convicted and incarcerated permanently.
Yeah.
We may see a lot more. And yeah, it would surprise me if this wasn't just the tip of the iceberg. You know, I think there's a lot more going on with this guy.
I do too. And I think there's a lot more people who are still not comfortable to talk until they know he cannot get out.
Exactly.
When you think things can't get darker, they do with Diddy. It just seems to be his thing. He seems to be kind of the spawn of Satan, to put it lightly. I don't know at this point, because the way that this guy has allegedly dehumanized so many people, and gotten away with it is just really, really shocking. There was some really poignant testimony coming in. Capricorn Clark is the woman's name. Broke down emotionally when describing Cassie Ventura being beaten by Combs. She witnessed it and really didn't do anything out of fear. I'm not victim blaming here, saying that, you know.
100%.
But from a behavioral standpoint, Robin Drake, by the way, with us. Retired FBI special. Just feel like it's like Cheers. Yeah. We're just already here.
There we are. We're
retired
here.
FBI special agent chief of the counterintelligence behavioral analysis program. From a behavioral, you know, perspective here, how do you evaluate authentic emotional courage versus, you know, performative emotion on the stand? Because I know they're going to go after her and they're going to say, well, you kept coming back. You left and you came back. Ungodly amount of times, even though she was being abused. And we'll talk about that in a moment. But, you know, she's up there, she's testifying, she's corroborating Cassie's story. What would you be looking for in her testimony for someone who kept working for Diddy over and over and over, even after a lot of abuse?
It's really complicated because you're gonna see every gamut of the emotional stress, insecurities, trauma, trauma bonding. Fear is the main motivator of all human beings, and you're seeing a lot of that play out. You're seeing the trauma bonding, like I said, play out. You're seeing insecurities. So all you're looking for in cases like this is you're going to be looking for raw, hard data for things that are actually done, you know, that you can collaborate. But when it comes to the individual interviews and testimonies, you're going to look just for consistencies between all these stories. And the challenge here also, Tony, is, boy, one person's fear is a little bit different than another person's fear. And so as I saw, as I was watching some of the testimony and some of the legal arguments going back and forth on this today, and they're saying, well, this story of from this one person, you know, like Cassie, is not completely lining up with this person. Well, because two different contexts from the same situation, and you got to just pay attention to the core situation of what Diddy was actually doing. But from a different optic from over here, different optic from over here, motivations from this one individual is going to be completely different or slightly different from this person's. The fear factor in one person is going to be playing out different than the fear factor in this other person. The recentness of the threats, the recentness of the fear of the individual. I mean, so there's so many different dynamics because we're not dealing with hard data in these situations. We're dealing with subjective impact of real life interactions with human behavior.
Yeah, very complex.
In other words, that's my long answer, horrible answer to a complex question, because everyone's going to be very different on how they respond and how they're testifying.
And Capricorn testified that she worked for Diddy on and off from 2004 to 2018, despite the claims that she was threatened, physically assaulted, forced in a car at gunpoint. That was when they went to go to Kid Cudi's house. Traumatized by workplace intimidation, even then reconnected with the legal team in 24 to ask for a job as his chief of staff. Again, that's a lot of stuff. And, you know, we think of trauma bonding. We think of that sometimes with, like, personal relationships and partners. But, I mean, it can certainly happen with anyone. But it's interesting that, you know, the bonding occurred after the job started, you know. Or maybe there was some, you know, younger things in each of their lives that they bonded over. And this, I mean, that's the sad part. I wonder if this sort of behavior and this sort of treatment, you know, felt a little familiar and... You know,
yes.
Yeah.
It does. And also, so another core tenet of human behavior that is guaranteed is not just fear is our motivator for human beings, but also we're always going to act in what we think is our best interests in terms of our safety, security, and prosperity. Prosperity being really the key here. So, and it's from the individual's point of view. So each of these individuals, they're acting what they think is their best interest. And so that's why, you know, left the job, actually got a higher paying job, but goes back because they're looking for their future. They're looking for prosperity. They're looking for, and they're also getting an understanding. Because remember, Diddy's reach was massive. You know, we likened him last time we chatted to a dictator of a nation state.
Yeah.
This nation state is big and you don't know exactly where the borders are. And as time passes, his claim on the borders is expanding. I mean, this is like a never-ending size to someone that's on the outside looking in. They're like, how can I even have a job or career in this industry unless I'm part of this nation state? Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to leverage the relationship I have, even though it's toxic, because it's in my best interest if I want to be in this industry to do that. Because everyone else is, because so they're rationalizing their behavior with groupthink, that they're seeing other people and social proof, and they're saying, well, maybe I'm the one that's wrong, maybe I'm the one that's not getting on board with this thing, which they're being told, which are being demonstrated. Because remember, everyone else that is, and normally that happens in this thing, like in most situations, people are putting forth their 5% highlight reel of how awesome it is and hiding the 98% of crap that's going on behind the scenes. And so when people around you and in this, and around Diddy circle is saying, you know, only presenting that 5% highlight reel, you're thinking, I'm the one that's wrong. I just got to get on board. At least just conjecture what's going on here. And then when you, and then you're just dealing with a lot of really unhealthy people because unhealthy people gravitate towards each other.
Yeah. I mean, and the thing is, the highlight reel of that 5% of the time that's really good it's probably really good to like a level that's not like anything else with the access that these people would have to things that they otherwise wouldn't. I mean, Diddy's the celebrity, and these are, this is a staff member of his that we're talking about. It's not Cassie. It's not another celebrity. So to be able to be a part of that world that one would have to imagine you kind of dreamed you'd want to be someday. That's why you ended up taking a job with Diddy. That, you know, that the perks, those little perks, even though they're probably pretty big, outweigh the pain and the trauma that you're going through at the time. And I'm wondering if there's probably a lot of downplaying of the trauma while you're going through it, not really realizing just how traumatic some of this stuff is until you're out of the environment.
These are a group of people, and we see it in our lives every day, that have a life out of balance. And that is, they're viewing success as materialism and things, and they're going to sacrifice healthy relationships, healthy engagement, mental health, to because they're coveting, because their social network has told them that success is this thing, this object, this notoriety, this title, this position, and this material wealth. Mm-hmm. Who on their deathbed said it was all worth it?
Yeah.
Not one person. Because remember, it's when you have your life out of balance, and this is why doing true crime is the simplest thing in the world, because every single case like this is circled around really, really unhealthy people that are valuing things over relationship. And that's where the life arc is. So all these people in a life, and so the life arc could have been very good and very altruistic. I want to get in the music industry. I want to do things to provide value to others. I want to inspire people through the creative things I'm doing. Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful life arc. But then when they get to that certain point and they're sold the bill of goods by the nation state of Diddy, then no. That's not the mission here. The mission here is the materialist. Yeah. The mission here is the title and position of being in the Diddy circle. The mission here is to get invited to the white party. Mm-hmm. And what goes on at the white party? Well, you got to be inside the nation of Diddy first to get invited to that. Yeah. And so you get groomed into and groomed out of the healthy outlook you had on life and valuing people over things. Mm-hmm. You know, I see this all the time in my great kids and ourselves as well. When you pursue things above relationships, you're always going to lose. You will just lose. And we all go out with exactly what we came in with. Mm-hmm. Nothing except the memories and relationships that we had. And I know I'm getting on kind of this pontification of, you know, altruistic, you know, living, but that's why I see this whole situation, this whole case through that lens, because this is a lot of unhealthy people. Now what's happening is with the people that are testifying, it takes an immense amount of courage to go against what they've been validating inside themselves and rationalizing their own behavior for all these years, to try to break out of that. But there's a lot of baggage they're bringing with it as they're trying to break out.
I think one of the shocking, everything's been shocking in this case, but but one of the many shocking things, and I'm curious to get your take on the mind behind this, is the folks who were allegedly witnessing Diddy be physically abusive to Cassie. I know there's other accusations about him with other people too. Some of the specific ones I'm talking about involves Combs kicking Cassie Ventura repeatedly while she was in a fetal position and begged security to help. Nobody stepped in. Clark was allegedly there. There was also allegations of Diddy literally punching Cassie in the stomach at a restaurant with many other celebrities that were there, other people in the music world that were brought up in around that that time in that era. I won't name their names on here, but you can certainly find them. And again, nobody does anything. And the thing is, it wasn't everybody that was a security guard that he probably threatened their life or the lives of their family if they ever go and tell anything on him. These were other people, you know, maybe not quite of his stature, because there really wasn't many that were ever that high of his stature in the music industry, but people who had a lot of clout and just stood by and watched this happen. I don't know. That's a weird psychology to it. And fame and money, I'm sure, are big players in that. But to watch like somebody just punch their significant other at dinner and you're like, hey, can I get some more of the ambrosia pie? It's like, that's weird.
That's what cults do. And that's what the Nazi party did during World War II. There's no difference.
Yeah.
There really isn't. I mean, when you are groomed into thinking this is normal and you are being told how to rationalize it, people are objectifying people that aren't part of that inner circle. Because remember, when you're part of the inner circle, everything's okay. So you're just battling for that title and position of the inner circle so you don't get treated like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens. Again, it happens inside of every single cult. It happened inside the Nazi party. People are trying to figure that out. It wasn't really all that complicated. You set people up as victims or problem solvers. And then inside, you know, what Hitler was shown was that, you know, this is how we're being abused by the world. And here's the reason why we're being abused. And so we're going to form a coalition around this. If you're not part of this group, you're on the outside of this group. On the outside of this group, we're just going to destroy you. And we're going to, you know, kill anyone that stands in a way. And I mean, there's so many cases of family members turning in family members, of mothers turning in kids. I mean, in some cases, I mean, it was really pretty hard. Actually, not mothers and kids. It's actually kids turning in parents, actually, yeah. in a lot of these cases. But it's the same thing because you're sold a bill of goods and you get brainwashed into thinking this is normal thinking. I mean, again, I love drawing some of these other cases together. You know, so let's move out of the darkness of World War II and the Nazis. You know, what we look at, again, we go back to Ruby Franke and Jody Hildebrandt.
Yeah.
You know, how they brainwashed their husband and the kids into thinking that this behavior of abuse is absolutely normal in life. And if you weren't part of it, you're going to be ostracized and kicked out of it. They're groomed into it, and they thought this was completely normal about how we raise kids is by beatings, by suffering, by mm-hmm. I mean, just think about the mental abuse that those kids went through in that case. Was that Ruby said that the two youngest kids were not behaving well enough. They did not deserve Christmas presents. And so they were forced to sit there on Christmas morning and watch everyone else open up the Christmas presents, and everyone in that house thought that was okay.
Yeah.
Or they didn't think it was okay, but they didn't know what to do about it. And that's the really key. They didn't know what to do about it. So in these people, let's bring it to the Diddy now. You see something important. You see something horrendous, but you don't know what to do about it. Who do you go to? You go to the police? Well, if I go to the police, Diddy kills people.
Yeah. No, allegedly. But yeah.
Or ruins careers. Yeah. I mean, bad things happen. People disappear who go against the system. So what do I do about it? I better just shut up.
Because you want to, it's self-preservation too. And
100%. Again, yeah. Fear is the greatest motivator here. And then just not knowing, because when someone's running a nation state or a cult, which is a little mini nation state mm-hmm. or the world of Diddy, where do you go?
Yeah. It seems like a lot of people saw firsthand what a monster he was. That just didn't say a word. It wasn't all just behind closed doors. In fact, it seemed to be pretty much out in the open. There always had been some rumblings, but he always, I mean, there's rumblings about everybody in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And it always just kind of felt like that's where it ended. But to hear like, oh my God, like all these people were witnessing this sort of stuff from him and not doing anything. And I get the, well, what do I do? But what then makes me wonder even more is, well, who else is doing this, that this is so normal? I would think it would be an outlier if Diddy's the only one doing it. Maybe people would be more apt to speak up about it. But who else is like this over there?
I don't think any so an outlier would be someone that has a healthy balance.
And no, that's really true.
You really think a healthy, balanced individual is going to make it inside that inner circle?
No,
see that?
No, true.
Because those people are already walking away.
Yeah.
And so it's only the unhealthy that make it through the door to that level.
Mm-hmm.
The broken or the breakable is a good way to put it. I don't want to say anyone's broken, you know, mm-hmm. before they did this, but the breakable made it through that door so they could be groomed into it.
I mean, with all of these things that are coming out now, and we haven't seen a lot publicly about other celebrities involved with the actual abuse. Maybe we will, maybe we won't. I don't know. But the fact that so many names are being named of just being present for these things, Do you think that this has changed something in that world? So many people just dead silent on this whole case, or even like leaving the country. Do you think people are having a reckoning with this behavior, or just, well, that one got caught?
Or a short time period, maybe. But at the same time, though, human beings are still human beings. We've been evolving for hundreds of thousands of years, and you're not going to undo our brokenness in a Diddy case. Mm-hmm. So it might ebb away for a short time as it's heightened and more sensitive. But as time passes and the memory of it fades, power will always corrupt. You know, abhorrent, unhealthy behavior will always be there. People willing to victimize others for their own gain will always be there. You know, we're not going to wipe it out. Mm-hmm. All you can do is try to have great systems of legal justice systems in place so you can try to overcome these things when they do happen, because it will happen again. Mm-hmm. It won't happen anytime too soon, but the seeds are always there because people are people, and there's always going to be someone who wants to take advantage of you.
Yeah. One more take on this. The mother of Cassie Ventura, she knew that Cassie was being abused. And to make him stop abusing, he demanded that she give him $20,000. And she paid it. It's like, it's extortion, but it's almost in reverse. You would almost be thinking it'd be the other way around of, I'll give you $20,000 not to tell anybody that I'm doing this. But it's more like, you're going to give me that money. I mean, that's very sadistic in terms of a power grab. And that takes an evil type of person to do that sort of shit.
No, the form of control.
Yeah.
Do you really think he needed $20,000?
No.
No, it's a form of control.
Yeah.
So he now owns the mother. That's it. And she paid to be owned by him.
Yeah, that's what makes it like so horrific.
Yeah. So I don't know these people, but we know patterns.
Mm-hmm.
when people that are struggling with life, with healthy behaviors, their decision-making process on how to fix problems and problem solving is also a bit off and a bit broken. And also fear, you know, so the mother's got fear factor involved there too. So she's doing the righteous thing that she thinks to try to save her daughter. And she doesn't know what to do because of fear, most likely fear of reprisal, fear of this. And if a powerful guy says, well, all you got to do is give me this money to save your daughter, you're going to consider those things because you don't think there's another option in there. Because, you know, if I can imagine the insinuations that people in Diddy's circle could be making of, hey, well, you might as well do this because you know what? We got the cops on the payroll. If you saw that last case, it's, yeah, it went nowhere. Wink, wink. Well, just because you got no recourse. So I guarantee there's a lot of that going on around too, because we've seen it. You know, we saw a lot of those accusations. How come this wasn't more investigated thoroughly? How come this? How come this? Because there was no law but Diddy law.
Yeah.
And so that's when you understand that and you understand him as a pure predator, it makes it all kind of fall into place. And if you fell into that circle of evil, where do you go? Because you really feel like there's, again, that analogy of being in the middle of a hurricane.
Mm-hmm.
You think all there is in life is a hurricane. You don't see there's a path out. Meanwhile, if you just took two steps in this direction here, it's calm air. But you didn't know what direction to walk in.
I'm wondering if we're going to start finding bodies. Pure conjecture, but I mean, because not necessarily, I mean, I know the whole Tupac thing, and who knows, maybe that will be something. But I'm wondering more like about, you know, people who aren't famous, just people who went against the grain of Diddyland that were employees. And they said, I'm going to, like, it had to be some in this amount of time that thought that they were going to go out and expose him. I would imagine just in sheer numbers, there'd have to be a small percentage that did that. And they got stopped. Because
maybe. Yeah. You know, I really think that the shields of their screening process of who to accept in were very good. And here's how they're good. If you had any semblance of moral reservation at the very first steps, and you weren't willing to focus on things over than healthy relationships and good, healthy dialogue. Mm-hmm. First of all, they self-selected out before it even got there. I mean, as I always try to, I always do that empathy thing where I place myself in those shoes in different positions. I can imagine, because I mean, I've seen really unhealthy people in the organizations and things that I've done. Dude, I just don't go around crazy people.
Yeah.
You know, so I would never, and so the healthy ones that could have done that, that would have been bumped off, wouldn't have been engaged necessarily. They wouldn't have made it through that first level that they'd have to be. I think it was really, it was a large nation state of Diddy.
Yeah.
But I think a very controlled nation state of Diddy, where you had a lot of groupthink. And once you made it to the white party invite, I think that's it. And then again, when you're talking about the celebrities, the thing I thought about this, I wonder if there's any repeat shows of celebrities, or were they one-offs or make one and a halves?
Yeah.
Because they saw it, the healthy ones, the ones that are actually good actors, good musicians, and all these things that are legit. They show up and they show up for a while. And then when he says, hey, it's time for the kids to go to bed or something like that, and then it all kinds of takes that shift. And then either they left at that point too, or their eyes were open and like, oh, we're going to walk away from this nut house. So
yeah,
I think it was just really, really isolated. It's a way, kind of just all the elements of cult are there, with the exception of he's not making money the same way the cults are. He's got a different business model.
That's true. Yeah.
All the elements are there though.
Yeah. I mean, it really is. It seems so chaotic, but it had to have been very organized for it to survive as long as it did.
Chaos is an interesting thing about that too. I don't, like you said, I don't think it was chaos. I think it was nature at a certain point. I don't think it took a lot of thought. I think they just knew how to react to every situation, to every person. There was just there was a method of operation. Mm-hmm. And again, they didn't go from zero to Diddy World. This was evolved over time. Because again, you start out with talent. You start out with being able to do things and having success. And then as it was slowly morphing because of his own crap and his own unhealthy behavior without a check and balance in there, it evolved into this. And over a period of time, it just became a natural state of being. Not claiming anyone involved here has got psychopathy, but remember, psychopaths and pure predators don't think about how to be that. They just are that. And I think this would evolve in here. They didn't have to think about how to run the Diddy empire. It just was being.
Yeah.
You know, if a problem comes up, here's what we do with problems. If a problem, you know, if we want someone on staff, here's our process for doing that. It just became a rep. When you have 20 or 30 years of reps down, you don't really think about how to do it. You're just doing it. The people know their roles because the people around him that were close, they've been there a long time. Yeah. They don't think about how to do things. They just do them. You know, just think about all the movies that we've seen about The Godfather and things like this. Are people given specific instructions, or are you given a look, a nod, and you know what to do?
Yeah.
Someone presents you with information and data, looks at you, looks at his buddy, goes, like this, and it's done. See what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just, same thing.
It's a language of its own, really, in a lot of ways.
It is. Just responding to the unhealthy environment around them to solve the problems that they pop up.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.